Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And this past Saturday, we celebrated 40 years since the USA did defeat the Soviets. And that put them into the gold medal round up against Finland. And that victory, where the USA did win gold back in 1980, did occur 40 years ago today. And right now, we head out to Las Vegas as they're celebrating the 1980 team with the captain of that USA hockey gold medal winning team. And that's Mike Ruzzioni here with us on the show. Rizzo, I appreciate you giving us a few minutes on this very busy day for you. And when you hear 40 years ago to this day is when you guys received the gold medal and defeated Finland. Just what goes through your mind and how do you process, how do you look back on what that team does mean to you all these years later?
Obviously, the memories is winning and sharing that moment with my teammates on the ice in the locker room and, you know, sharing that moment 40 years later. But also realizing that, we touched the lives of a lot of people in a very positive way. And as a country, we were looking for something to feel good about, and, you know, along we come. And I think my teammates and I take great pride in knowing that it was special for us, but special for a lot of people as well.
How long did it take you to realize the significance of what it meant for the country with the hostage situation and what was going on in the country as well? For people to realize that was more than just a hockey win, you know, is one thing. But when did it take the players, you guys, to realize that?
Probably when we got when we went to Washington, when President Carter sent Air Force One to pick us up and take us to the White House. And when we were on the bus going to the White House, the streets were lined with people waving flags. And it was like, wow, this thing's a big deal. And then, you know, 40 years later, so many things have happened over those 40 years that have made us realize how big it was and how special it was for a lot of people and for a lot of different reasons. You know, for some people, it was a hockey game. And for some people, it was, you know, a patriotic pride in our country moment.
What do you remember the night you guys win gold? You know, obviously the crazy emotions, you beat the Soviets, and then you go on to win the gold medal against Finland. When you finally did it, what were those memories right away that came to mind in the moment when you win gold?
I think the joy and the celebration of, I can't believe we just did this. Going into the tournament, nobody thought we could win a medal, let alone win the whole tournament. So, you know, I remember just saying you couldn't go from player to player fast enough to hug him. It was just a great joy and excitement and to be able to celebrate in your own country, with the teammates. It was pretty special.
What type of team did you guys thought you had before the Olympics did start? And when was that first moment that you thought, hey, we could actually go on out there and win this entire thing?
Well, I think going into the Olympics, we thought we could get to the medal round. We thought we had a chance to get to the medal round, and to get to the medal round, guess what? Anything can happen. So that was the goal. But when Billy Baker scored to tie Sweden, we didn't play really well that game. And Billy's goal might have been the biggest of the Olympics. If he doesn't score, who knows how we react the next night? But Billy scores a huge goal. We tie Sweden, and then we step out on the ice against Czechoslovakia with a tremendous confidence. And when we beat them, then we realized we had a chance. Then we thought we could get to the medal round, which was the first objective. And then, once you're in the medal round, you got to play two games. And you played, I hate to say it this way, but you really did play it one game at a time, one shift, one period. That was our approach. And as we got to the medal round, that was going to be the mindset of our team.
Talking to Mike Ruzzioni, of course, the captain of the 1980 USA men's winning hockey team gold medal. Rizzo, the night before the game when you're playing the Soviets, the biggest hockey game of your life, how'd you spend the night before the game?
Well, I had a state police officer. My parents and my dad and my coaches, a high school football coach, cousins and friends were in a Winnebago outside of Lake Placid. So I asked the state police officer if he'd take me to the campsite because I wanted to, you know, hang with my dad and mom and cousins and stuff and, you know, kind of have a few beers and kind of relax and enjoy, you know, being with my friends and family. So he said, absolutely. So he drove me up to this campsite. I went there and had a little barbecue on the grill. I was a little cold outside, but we sat in the trailer. And like I said, I had a few beers and kind of relaxed. And then the state trooper drove me home probably around 10:30, quarter of 11. And I went back to the village and got a good night's sleep and got up ready to play.
So you were pretty calm then. Did that change, you know, leading up to the game the next day when you were hours, you know, away from puck drop? Did those emotions change at all?
Oh, yeah, I think they absolutely changed because, you know, I say it changes because it's a big game. You know, I played big games in high school and college, and I try to just tell myself that it's still a hockey game. It's played on the ice. It's played on ice that you've played on your whole life. Don't try to do anything different. Don't try to change anything. Keep playing the way you're playing. And we as a team continue to play the way we're playing. But, you know, you get the nervous butterflies. You're anxious. You're curious. You're nervous, and you're excited. And, you know, if you don't have those emotions, you're in trouble because it is a big game. But you have to also understand that you can't get too high. You get too high and too excited, and you're going to run around and do stupid things. And if you're not prepared, then you're going to get, you know, your head handed to you. So I think you're going to find that balance. And I know I was able to do it, and I think my team was as well. Clearly, some players react differently than others. But, you know, I went into the game with the, you know, the butterflies that you get when you play a big game.
What do you recall before the game? We all have seen it in the movie Miracle, but what do you recall what Herb actually said to you guys?
Well, he didn't say as long as he did in the movie. Each in the movie was a long time. I remember it being, you were born to be a player. You were meant to be here. This moment is yours. And that was about it. It was very much to the point. It was our moment. We were meant to be there. And I thought he put it right in the right place.
Your goal, obviously you've been asked about it probably thousands of times in your life, but your goal, what do you remember about that? Take us through the goal up against the Soviets.
Well, I remember it gave us the lead. You know, it was a play that developed. I had the puck in the front and the defenseman in front of me, and I used him as a screen. If he came at me, I was going to pass the puck, but I used him as a screen. And, you know, the puck went in. It was 10 minutes left, which is an eternity. And, it gave us the lead. I was happy that I had a chance to help my teammates out when I could. And, you know, for the last 10 minutes, we played pretty well.
A few more with the captain of the 1980 men's hockey team, USA winning gold medal on the 40th anniversary of them getting that gold medal, defeating Finland, as we're talking to Mike Ruzzioni. The tape delay factor, because you guys win the game, you know, right after the victory, how did you guys process it? And how about when you found out, like, about everyone else's reaction, too? I know it's different back in then. It's not social media, so you don't have people contacting you directly. But how did you process, you know, after beating the Soviets that night, especially with the tape delay factored in there?
Well, my teammates went back to the house where all our parents were staying and watched the game. Jim Craig and I got grabbed by ABC Sports and did a bunch of interviews and media requests, so I really didn't have enough time to enjoy it, to be honest with you. By the time we got done all that stuff, I had to be back in the village because we had an early practice the next morning. So I didn't think of it as that big a deal until after the Olympic Games, when then we realized, you know, what it meant. But to me, you know, it was a huge win. It was a great win, but we still had another game to play. And, you know, to this day, people think we only played one game.
How big was it playing the Soviets before that, you know, in that exhibition game that Herb scheduled where you guys got blown out? How big was it for you guys, confidence-wise, to see them once before?
I think it helped us, but we were nowhere the same team the second time than the first time. I think the first time we kind of stood around and watched them because I think we were losing 6-0 right away. But, you know, that game was never talked about again. When it was over, it was over. We never brought it up in Lake Placid. We never brought it up. You know, before the Soviet game, it was if the game never happened.
Just curious, Mike Ruzzioni, a few more with him before we let him run on the day, you know, the 40th year anniversary of the USA winning gold medal up against Finland back in 1980. Herb, you see it in the film when you guys win, and also in the real life footage too. 1980, you guys defeat the Soviets, and he goes in the locker room. You know, we've heard the stories that he said, if you lose the game up against Finland, you'll take it to your bleeping grave. After you guys finally got the gold medal, just curious, what did Herb say to you guys that night?
Nothing.
Really?
He said nothing after we beat the Soviets. He said nothing after we beat Finland. He just let us enjoy the moment, and he stood up in the background. He stayed very true to form from the beginning to the end.
Wow. When you think back about it, and I know you've had years and years to process it, and you know your life is always going to be synonymous with that team, what made that team so special? How did this get done when you reflect on that?
Well, a couple of things. One, we were obviously better than people thought, and maybe we were even better than we thought. I mean, who knew how good our players were going to be? You know, average age was 22. If you took that team today and put it in college hockey, we might be the youngest team in college hockey. So we were young, and we were awfully good. And I think that's what I take away from the whole thing. When the smoke cleared, we were better than people thought.
And then before we let Rizzo run, Mike Ruzzioni here with us. I've told you before, one of my favorite movie scenes of all time is after the game when you guys are skating afterwards and Herb is making you do those again, sprints basically on the ice. So you scream out, Mike Ruzzioni, Winthrop, Massachusetts, who do you play for? The United States of America. And a few years ago, you told me that actually never happened. Wondering now, just to ask you about it, how did that practice after that game actually end? I know Hollywood played it up in the movie Miracle a bit.
Oh, I remember because only 16 of us skated. Because the other guys didn't dress that night. We only dressed 16 guys sometimes. So, and I think Buzzy Snyder got thrown out for fighting, so there were only 15 of us. I remember the drill ending, and we did them. We did them for about an hour and 15 minutes. I remember Mark Johnson smashing a stick against the glass, and Herb said, if I hear another stick break against the glass, you'll skate till you die.
Wow.
Well, that's how it ended. But I tell people I said that to keep them happy.
Well, that's great. Well, Mike, I know you guys are out in Vegas. What is it like to get the band back together?
Oh, we're having a blast. We're the most immature 60-year-old men in the world.
No other way that we want it to be. Well, once again, it's always great to relive these memories. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes today. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.
There he is, Mike Ruzzioni, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. 40 years ago today, as we said, the USA did defeat Finland to cap off one of the more remarkable sports achievements that there ever been. And on Saturday, they had a miracle actually playing on television. Every time that movie's on, I must have seen that movie probably 80, 90 times by now. Every time it's on, I'm a sucker for it. I watch it. Right before the Stanley Cup playoffs, I will always watch it at least once or twice. And that is one of the great movies. And to be able to relive that actual story with Mike Ruzzioni, and I've had him on a few times over the years, is very cool. But neat when you get him on a day like this where they celebrated that gold medal victory 40 years ago to this day. And on Saturday, they were celebrating 40 years ago to that day on the USA's victory up against the Soviets, which is one of, in my opinion, the greatest upset of all time in the sporting world. But when you look back at that team, and I wasn't alive for it, but you hear the stories over the years and you get a Ruzzioni's perspective on it, and you know about the hostage situation and what it meant for our time, you know, in our country, a Ruzzioni, they were looking at it as just a regular hockey game. And it took them a little while to figure out the significance and the importance of that. And you hear it from him when he said it, you know, the night before the game. Think about not to have those nerves the night before the game. He's drinking a beer with his family, and then the day of, a little nerves do creep in, obviously, and it's a complete 180. But that night, you're doing a bunch of interviews, and it's tough to even grasp what you just accomplished. And ultimately, over the years and over the time, and now 40 years to the day, for the gold medal, you see how much that team and how much it meant to people and how they're still celebrated to this day. And that speaks volumes. And that team has been given a little extra life from the movie, too. Not that they needed it, but the movie does help to have people that weren't alive there to try to understand that victory and relive those moments as well. So it's very neat stuff. And we appreciate Mike giving us some time on CBS Sports Radio. So he's very busy out in Las Vegas with all those guys. I would love to be partying with those guys out in Vegas. Oh, what a weekend in Vegas. You get the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight, and you also get the 1980 men's hockey team there. Man, Vegas always happening. Don't need extra juice, but they got that extra juice this weekend. We'll come on back. When we do come back, we're going to replay some of our conversation that we had about a week and a half ago with Tyson Fury, just to give us a little more perspective on what he was going through and how just remarkable and incredible this comeback story is. Zach Gelb Show, 17 after the hour right here at Coast to Coast CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Glad you're still here. Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
23 after the hour, it's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. The biggest and best story from this past weekend is Tyson Fury defeating Deontay Wilder. And what Tyson Fury has gone through post that Klitschko fight, it is from being down and out to being able to get back up, fight those demons, and it's a daily fight still to this day, but being able to get back to the top of that mountain. About 10, 11, 12 days ago, whatever it was, we actually had Tyson Fury on to preview the fight, and I want to play back some of that conversation. And if you want to hear the entire interview, go to my Twitter page, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Give me a follow, send me a few tweets, and if you go to the link in my bio, you could click on all of our content, whether it's past interviews, past show segments, and you could find the Tyson Fury interview. If you just go back to the date of 10, 11, 12 days ago, I'll give you the exact date. I have it right here if you just give me 2 seconds if you want to do that. It was on the 12th of February is if you go back to that section of our podcast, that's when you could find it. So what I want to do right now, just to kind of capture the perspective of where Tyson Fury was, it's no better than to talk to Tyson Fury and play back that interview, and that's what we'll do right now. We'll play about 5-6 minutes of that chunk, just to illustrate what he did go through to get back to where he was and what we saw on Saturday.
Tyson Fury's always struggled mentally. My whole life I've had anxiety and depression, even from being a little kid. And I never knew what it was until I got educated on the matter in around about 2016. I always used to just suffer and grin and bear it, really, and not talk about it to no one because I thought it was like an embarrassing thing or whatever. I thought I was just one of those people who had these problems all the time. And it wasn't until I had a mental breakdown that I got medical help. And I was diagnosed as a bipolar disorder and manic depressive or something like that, another something else. And yeah, it's been a long tough journey. And mental health is a silent killer. It's the biggest killer of men under 35, bigger than cancer, bigger than everything in the world. Men under 35 are more likely to kill themselves than to die of anything else. So mental health is a real issue at the moment. And you know, there's a lot of great men and women out there, sportsmen and women, and people of high power and high interest. Are promoting at the moment. And I believe I've had a big part in that over the last few years with my well-documented journey from heavyweight champion of the world to 400 pounds in weight and wanting to commit suicide and then turning it back around and getting back to the pinnacle of the sport again within 2 years. So that's been a well-documented journey. And it's a journey that I wanted to write down and a journey that I wanted to promote, because I know how hard it is in life, and just that one little video or one little book sentence you read or see someone say, it can help, because I've been in that position and I've seen people talk about it and think, you know what, if that person can do it, so can I. And I wanted to be one of those people, like an influencer in mental health. And since then, I've had so many messages and so many letters and things thanking me and whatever for being open and honest and how I've helped people with their mental problems and their mental health. And I've become an ambassador for mental health in sports. And it's absolutely an amazing feeling. And it's almost a better feeling than even boxing can ever know how to be, because boxing's an entertainment factor. It's a sport and we entertain people for a living. But when you're actually helping people and saving lives, I think that's a bit more than sports. And it's become a real calling card to me, the mental health side of things. It's something that I'm really passionate about, and that's something that I really talk about a lot in public, and I believe the more people talk about it, the more the stigma will go, because it's almost like I said, like I was thinking when I was young and when I didn't know about it, like I thought it was like a made you a weaker person than the next. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't make you a weaker person. As soon as you come out about it, as soon as you can get back well again. So I'd urge anybody who's suffering with mental health problems to speak to a doctor or speak to the friends and family, or even if they've got no friends and family to speak to, then seek medical advice immediately, because the sooner you get the medical advice, the sooner you can get back normal again. I used to wake up every day and it was a grey day. Even if the sun was shining, it would be grey. And I used to pray to God at night to kill me. And I didn't want to live anymore for such a long, long time. And when I look back at that period now, I think, wow, how low must have I have been to be praying for death and to try to commit suicide and stuff like that. And to be back here now promoting what I was going through, it's a big, big honor for me to do that and to help others in the same need.
I know that you did an interview recently and you said still every Sunday you feel suicidal. And I really appreciate you opening up to us. You know, I've had friends that have dealt with mental illness and they've turned to drugs. And unfortunately for two of them, it did take their lives. And it's something that's very tough to go through throughout life. And it's great when someone like you speaks out against it, because it provides people the platform to understand that they could get the help. But when you go through a bad day now, how do you get past it to keep on living and keep on fighting the good fight?
You know, I live a structured, routined life. And I know I have to live like that, because the way I lived before, it didn't work for me. I train every day. I set short-term goals. It doesn't have to be something big. It can be something really small, but I set goals and I achieve them. I hit targets that I set, and that keeps me motivated. And the bit my medicine has been health and fitness, eating healthy, eating clean, drinking plenty of water, and I'm working out regular, and it seems to have worked a real treat for me. It's kept the demons away. But don't get me wrong, there's going to be times when you're feeling down and you're feeling low and you're feeling depressed. Like I said, most Sundays I have that feeling of anxiety and depression. But I know that Monday morning I'm going to go straight back to my routine of training in the mornings, cardio in the night time, and eating clean again. And I look forward to the week. I used to look forward to Friday afternoons, Friday evenings, because it was the end of work and everybody was off for the weekend. But now I look forward to Monday morning, because I know I can get back on the grind again. I can get back to my work, back to my job that I do every day. And I live that scheduled lifestyle. It seems to really, really help. And if there's people listening who are struggling, who do need a bit of advice on that, try the routine, try setting goals and small-term targets and stuff, and hit them. You feel much better about yourself. And I used to drink a lot when I was going through my depression and all that. It would go away for 10 minutes while I was drinking. It'd be totally gone while you're drunk. But the next day, it would hit you even harder and harder and harder. The drinking, it's not an escape route. It'll only put you deeper in a darker hole. So yeah, that's not a good idea either. The best thing to promote mental health is a healthy lifestyle, clean living, healthy life for a long life.
Powerful stuff from Tyson Fury, and we appreciated him joining us back on February 12th on the Zach Gelb Show. And you just get to see from where he was when he says, quote, "I used to wake up every day and it was a gray day. Even if the sun was shining, it would be gray. I used to pray to God at night to kill me. I didn't want to live anymore for such a long, long time. When I look back on that period now, I think, wow, how low must I have been to be praying for death and to try to commit suicide. To be back here now promoting what I was going through, it's a big honor for me to do that and help others in the same need." So you have a guy that was going to bed at night thinking that he wanted to end his life, then every Sunday have those anxiety, you know, suicidal thoughts, and then we get to see and celebrate what he was able to do on Saturday. To go from 400 pounds after the Klitschko fight, you know, using alcohol, using drugs, wanting to end his life, all that time off, makes the comeback, you know, wins some fights, ends up having the draw versus Wilder, and then in the rematch, TKOs him in the 7th round. It's truly something that you could not write. You could not write that script. The Tyson Fury 30 for 30 is going to be must-watch TV, and I can't wait to see what the next chapter is, and I hope we get many more great moments to celebrate with Tyson Fury, because it's an inspirational story that we could all learn from. We'll take a time out on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. It's 32 after the hour. And when we come back on the show, we do have to end the show in style, as we do each and every day. And that's the closing bell. We have some positive stories in the world of sports, also some negative stories as well. And you'll get my thoughts along with Mikey B and Tom DiBenedetto's as well.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together. Babe, you take care of our Gigi. And I got Nani, Bibi, and Coco. We're still the best team.
Kobe's was my dear friend. He was like a little brother. Everyone always wanted to talk about the comparisons between he and I just wanted to talk about Kobe. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died. Or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
The day Kobe gave my respect was, guys were complaining. I said, Shaq, Kobe's not passing the ball. I said, I'll talk to him. I said, Kobe, there's no I in team. And Kobe said, I know, but there's an in me in that. So I went back. So I went back and told Rick and Big Shot Bob, I said, just get the rebound. He's not passing.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
There's some powerful sound from the Kobe and Gianna Bryant Memorial that was held earlier today at the Staples Center. The voices you heard in order, Vanessa Bryant, Michael Jordan, and then also Shaquille O'Neal. Before we get to the closing bell, I just want to play one more sound. Here is Rob Pelinka, Kobe's longtime agent and best friend, talking about the last conversation that he shared with the great Kobe Bryant.
I grabbed my phone and text Kobe back that I had seen the baseball agent at a Lakers game just the other night and was happy to help him with whatever he wanted. It was now just past 9:30. Kobe texts back explaining his desire to help a friend of his secure a baseball agency internship for one of his young daughters. Kobe vouched for the girl's character, intellect, and work ethic. He clearly wanted to champion a bright future for her. I text Kobe right back and said I would put a plan in motion to help him get that done. A handful of minutes later, Kobe and Gianna and seven other beautiful souls ascended into heaven. Kobe had been texting me from the helicopter. The girl in that text chain that he was wanting to help so badly was Lexi Altobelli, the surviving daughter of Coach John Altobelli, who was also on the helicopters. Kobe's last human act was heroic. He wanted to use his platform to bless and shape a young girl's future.
Powerful stuff. Again, when you hear these tributes and Rob Pelinka, it was in church and felt his phone going off, and it was Kobe, and that was the last time they did communicate before the plane did, the helicopter did tragically go down. And as Rob said, right up until the end, Kobe was trying to help, other girls try to reach their dreams. Just a life that we lost way too soon, and you know, with Kobe and then also clearly with Gianna as well, both accomplished many great things, and there were still more great things to accomplish before it was their time. But that's life. As cruel as it is, life could get taken from you in each and every second. And when you look back at the Kobe situation, you could learn really two things. One is you admire his work ethic and you try to be as diligent as possible and never get complacent with success. And then also two, and probably the most important one, you never know when life could be taken from you. So if you have any problems, if you have any issues that you need to hash out, you should do it. And life is way too short to get caught up in the petty things, because in a snap of a finger, it can get taken away. Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's end the show out as we do each and every day. Let's hit the closing bell.
Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, let's start things off in the positive side of things. David Ayers, the 42-year-old Zamboni driver and emergency goalie, got called into action over the weekend for the Carolina Hurricanes and helped them get a victory, allowed the first two goals before the game, has a Reuben sandwich, then gets called into the game, allows the first two goals, eventually makes eight saves as the Carolina Hurricanes do defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday. So a stock up to the Reuben eating sandwich, Zamboni driver, and emergency goalie superstar in David Ayers. We played you the audio in the last segment, Tyson Fury, to see the fall and then to see the comeback coming off the original rise is really one of the great inspirational sports stories. And on a Monday, coming off the fight on Saturday, it's a big celebratory day for Tyson Fury. From beating Klitschko to then basically being down and out to then climbing back to the top of the mountain and TKOing Deontay Wilder in the seventh round is truly something, and he's deserving of a big fat stock up. Mikey, Mikey B.
All right, stock up to Jeremy Lamb of the Pacers. Unfortunate news that he suffered a torn ACL and torn meniscus, but after this injury on the court, he went to the free throw line, knocked down two free throws, hit them. Then we find out he's got a torn ACL and torn meniscus. So stock up to Jeremy Lamb for some serious toughness and hopefully a speedy recovery for him as well.
There's a lot of those stories that happen like that, and I don't think we always highlight them, but two that come to mind right away in just the last few years: Carson Wentz tearing his ACL, and I also believe it was his LCL or MCL. He tore something else too. And then he threw a touchdown pass against the Rams in that Super Bowl winning season, then goes into the locker room. And how about this past NBA Finals with Klay Thompson? He walks off the court, then comes back on, and then has to, you know, hit his free throws too, because in his mindset, if he doesn't do that, then he can't return to the game. But clearly with what Klay suffered with a torn ACL, that wasn't going to happen. So it's you see the toughness of players and where their mindset is with injuries, you know, like that. Now, even who do we have on Tough Juice? Caron Butler. When we had him on, and we were talking to him about in the finals, in that season where they won the championship, he gets injured, and he basically put his leg or his kneecap back into place and walked off the court on his own power to send a message to his team about toughness. So it's things like that when players get hurt. How they do it, I don't know, because I'd be sitting in a corner crying and basically asking for a batch of cookies and a warm milk and some pacifier. That's what I'd be doing.
Cookies are always a good thing, though, Zach. Don't worry.
Especially when you deliver them.
Yes, always. All right, and then also stock up to this G League coach, Wisconsin Herd, Chase Buford, who had this complete, honest
this
rant
awesome.
About the officials.
The officiating definitely went right for Grand Rapids. That was as unprofessional as an officiating performance. And I hope you tweet this out and tag the league.
Tweet it!
Because that was embarrassing. Matt Rafferty is a That being said, we have to be so much better at the end of games. We can't blow a 21-point lead with 12 minutes to go. However bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are, we have to be better closing games. And so that's the way I feel.
If I just saw this coach, by the way, and I just saw the clip, I would have thought he bet on the game if I didn't know that he was a coach, because his hair is all over the place. It looks like he's just came off running like 100 miles or something, and he hasn't showered in about 8 days. And then you hear him speak. You must think this ref is the worst person in the world. But man, he really went in on the referee, and they released a statement that it was unprofessional. He did too, and there you go. What's the coach's name again?
Chase Buford.
Chase Buford. There we go.
Stock up.
All right, stock up to Joe Burrow. Today was hand measurement day at the Combine, and his hands measured a little bit small, 9 inches. It's actually kind of crazy small. It would be, the smallest first-round quarterback hand since 2008. But he handled it well, going to Twitter and saying, considering retirement after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts. So the swagger is clearly still alive, and no, it should not chase anybody off of Joe Burrow, his 9-inch hands.
And then also, just to get back to that Chase Buford story, he was suspended 2 games for that rant. That's what they elected to go with. All right, when I get to the stock down to whoever confiscated the fan at the Astros spring training game that had the Houston Astros sign. That's not even close to what's coming this year with the Houston Astros, and they confiscated that fan sign. Just an absolute disgrace, so a stock down. And then also, I have to give a stock down, and Tom talked about it with the hand size. Who cares? This is why I hate the Combine at times. Oh, Joe Burrow may have small hands. Smallest hands since, what you say, 2008?
Yes.
Was the measurement?
If he gets picked in the first round, it'll be the smallest first-round QB hand since 2008.
The fact that that is even a stat is stupid. It's asinine. Watch the tape. See how the guy throws the football. I think he'll be okay. So a stock down to the small hands of Joe Burrow and people making this a big deal.
You idiot! Get back in there at once and sell!
Stock down to Coach Nick Nurse for saying the Bucks are boring because they blow everybody out. This is such a gimmick from Coach Nurse just to set up everything that happens in the playoffs so he can kind of make it all mellow for how good the Bucks are. So stock down to Nick Nurse for that comment. And stock down to the NHL trade deadline. 3/4 of the season in, and now it's happening. The guys are going to be together for 15 games before the playoffs. It's too late in the year. It's ridiculous. Stock down.
You idiot! Get back in there at once and sell!
It was an entertaining day, though. And I enjoyed, as a Ranger fan, that they didn't trade Chris Kreider, and they kept Chris Kreider and got him in for 7 years at $6.5 million. And you get that news, and then you find out that their rookie sensation goalie Igor Shesterkin and also Buchnevich were in a car accident. You know, when they're reading that report, I'm saying, and John Davidson, the president, is saying, I'm like, oh my God, the way he was giving the tone off in the press conference, I thought it was a serious accident. No serious injuries. Looked like Buchnevich is going to be, you know, day to day. And then Shesterkin is going to miss a few weeks. But, you know, that's disappointing. But I was happy that Kreider didn't get dealt and they ended up trading Brady Shea. But enough with my New York Rangers happiness and then frustration all in one day. But I thought the trade deadline was fine. I get your point, though.
Look, I got to knock Deontay Wilder. Stock down for the excuses, the 45-pound suit, and then also crushing his trainer even worse. This guy's protecting your life, your existence on this planet, okay? So I want to see a rematch, but you got to chill out, admit you lost, and come back better, Deontay, please.
It's the fighter mentality. That guy wanted to get dragged out, but you know his assistant trainer did a perfect job in that because he was cooked. He was done.
And then just quickly, anybody criticizing guys sitting out combine drills, Burrow's not going to throw. Chase Young is not going to work out, but he's there to interview. Look, this is for them to get a job. So if they don't feel they need it, that is on them. There's no reason to be criticizing anybody for not participating in a drill at the combine. So stock down to anybody doing that.
You idiot! Get back in there at once and sell!
I kind of want to do, and I just thought about this on the fly, I want to do a mock Wonderlic between Mikey B and Tom DiBenedetto. And it will
know.
Be the
we
true
both
underdog
had the exact
story.
Same. Please, no.
Please don't.
I think
no.
It'd be the true underdog story. D-Ben is the clear favorite, being the Columbia grad, and Mikey B, I would say,
nobody
you're a major
this.
Underdog. We may do it.
Nobody wants
it. We may have to do it. Heck, if Mraz could get an 1,100 on the SAT.
He didn't, though. That's why. He didn't. He's never go well.
Well, if he can, I think D-Ben and Mikey B can answer a few questions. So maybe we'll do that later in the week. Okay, fun show today. I'd like to thank Kendrick Perkins for joining us in studio. Sean Porter for joining us and Mike Ruzzioni as well. And each and every one of you for calling, listening, and tweeting. We'll talk to you again tomorrow right here across many of the same CBS Sports Radio affiliates, SiriusXM Channel 206 and the Radio.com application. I'm Zach Gelb. Have a great night, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.